Now, this was during the impeachment controversy, and anyone who had been following the news knew that Bill Clinton had found it incredibly difficult to get one job for Monica Lewinsky. Where did the man have 300,000 jobs to give anyone? The fact is that the civil rights leadership continues to pursue a strategy that has run its course, that no longer pays real dividends. Meanwhile, there is another group that is following the Booker T. Washington strategy, and that is the non-white immigrants. I don't just mean the Koreans and the Asian Indians, I also mean black immigrants, the West Indians, the Nigerians. All are darker than African Americans, and yet white racism does not seem to stop them. The immigrants know that racism today is not systematic, it is episodic, and they are able to find ways to navigate around its obstacles. Even immigrants who start out at the very bottom are making rapid gains, surging ahead of African Americans and claiming the American dream for themselves. West Indians, for instance, have established a strong business and professional community and have nearly achieved income parity with whites. How is this possible? The immigrants don't spend a lot of time contemplating the hardships of the past. Their gaze is firmly fixed on the future. They recognize that education and entrepreneurship are the fastest ladders to success in America. They push their children to study so that they will be admitted to Berkeley and MIT, and they pool their resources and set up small businesses so that they can make some money and move to the suburbs. There are plenty of hurdles along the way, but the immigrant is sustained by the hope that he or his children will be able to break the chain of necessity and pursue the American dream. Thus, we find that any group that is trying to move up in America and succeed is confronted with two possible strategies, the immigrant strategy and the Jesse Jackson strategy. And it is an empirical question as to which one works better. So far, the evidence is overwhelming that the immigrant approach of assimilating to the cultural strategies of success is vastly better for group uplift than the Jesse Jackson approach of political agitation. One of the blessings of living in a multiracial society is that we can learn from one another. Black Americans have contributed greatly to America by pressuring the country to live up to its highest principles. As an immigrant, I owe a tremendous debt to the black civil rights movement for opening up doors that would otherwise have remained closed. All Americans have a lot to learn from African Americans about suffering, about dignity, about creativity, and about charm. But it is also a fact that the black leadership can learn a lot from the immigrants, especially black immigrants. African Americans can move up faster if they focus less on manufacturing representation and more on building intellectual and economic skills. In this way, blacks can achieve a level of competitive success that is ultimately the best and final refutation of rumors of inferiority. Martin Luther King once said that ultimately every man must write with his own hand the charter of his Emancipation Proclamation. What he meant by this is that in a decent society, citizens will be granted equality of rights under the law. We do have that right, but we do not have any more rights than this. African Americans were not always granted legal equality, but now they have it, and it is all that they are entitled to. King's point is that what we do with our rights, what we make of ourselves, the kind of script that we write of our own lives, this finally is up to us. Chapter 5. When Virtue Loses All Her Loveliness, Freedom and Its Abuses. Hey, American man, you are the godless homosexual rapist of your grandmother's pet goat. Salman Rushdie. The most serious charge against America is not that it is an oppressive society or one that denies freedom and opportunity to minorities. It is the charge that America is an immoral society. Islamic fundamentalists hold that the United States and the West may be materially advanced, but they are morally decadent. This is not a new perspective. Muslim travelers to the West have frequently commented on what they regard as the low state of Western morality, especially in the sexual domain. In one medieval Muslim account, a Frenchman comes home to find another man in bed with his wife. "What brings you here to my wife?" he asks. The man replies, "I was tired, so I came in to rest." "And how did you get into my bed?" "I found the bed made, so I lay down on it." "But the woman was sleeping with you." "It was her bed. Could I have kept her out of her own bed?" "If you do this again," the Frenchman warns, "you and I will quarrel." The Muslim writer cites the incident to show the shocking moral laxity that he believes characterizes marriages in the West. If Muslims thought the level of Western sexual morality was bad in the Middle Ages, imagine what they must think of us today. Not surprisingly, Islamic criticisms of Western mores have intensified in modern times. As Sayyid Qutb observes, at least the West used to be Christian. Now it is pagan. Qutb argues that modern America is suffering from jahiliyyah, from the same polytheism, idolatry, and moral degeneracy that the Prophet Muhammad found in the Bedouin tribes in the 7th century. The Islamic view of Western immorality is supported by the observations of many critics within America and Europe. Václav Havel, president of the Czech Republic, recently termed the West the first atheistic civilization in the history of humankind. In 1978, in his famous Harvard address, the Soviet dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn charged that in the West, freedom has become another word for licentiousness, and man's sense of responsibility to God and society has grown dimmer. Many American conservatives and evangelical Christians share these concerns. Shortly after the September 11 terrorist attack, the editor of an evangelical weekly described the World Trade Center as a modern Tower of Babel, dedicated to the false deities of materialism, secularism, and relativism. On the right, figures such as Robert Bork, Bill Bennett, and Gary Bauer have warned that American culture has deteriorated to the point that, in Bork's expression, the U.S. is slouching towards Gomorrah. Some Americans will find this portrait of their country to be exaggerated and unduly harsh. They will point out correctly that many Americans are deeply religious, and that, of all first world countries, America has the highest percentage of people who believe in God and go to church. While recognizing that America exhibits a good deal of religious and moral diversity, these people note that this is the natural consequence of a society whose people come from different backgrounds and practice different faiths. They argue, too, that Hollywood movies and TV shows are entertainment. They should not be seen as representative of how people really live. The weirdos that we see on daytime talk shows, for instance, are the modern equivalent of circus freaks. Finally, we should note that in recent years, crime and illegitimacy rates have declined, so that American culture is healthier in these respects. While these are valid points, the criticisms of Qutb, Solzhenitsyn, Havel, Bork, and others cannot be so easily dismissed. True, Americans are probably more religious and socially conservative than Europeans, but that is not saying much, considering how decadent the Europeans are. Notwithstanding all the picturesque churches that dot the American landscape, religion seems to have little or no public authority over society. And the death of God appears to have resulted, just as Nietzsche said it would, in the collapse of traditional morality and the rise of moral relativism. Even people who live upright, good lives have difficulty justifying their choices or regarding them as normative for others. Meanwhile, every depraved pervert, such as Rushdie's American character who wants to have sex with a goat, can deflect criticism by invoking the relativist doctrine, "Who are you to impose your values on me?" The disastrous consequences of this moral upheaval have been compiled by Bill Bennett in his Index of Leading Cultural Indicators, but they are evident for all to see.